time to wake up with Bill Finch. 203-333-9422. Only on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Good morning and wake up, Connecticut. Connecticut, are you tired of being divided and manipulated? Tired of Fox News and the right-wing screamers and whiners? Tired of entertainment masquerading as news, ignoring complex public policy questions of the day while perfecting bombast and fear? Are you tired of science deniers, billionaires, bullies, and politicians who don't fight climate change? Well, today you're in for a real treat. If you're tired of spineless Republicans who refuse to hold lawmakers like the president to account of the United States Constitution, if you're tired of Democrats who aren't fighting for workers and organized labor, then you found your home here on The Voice of Connecticut. For 1 hour every Sunday, we attempt to provide a patriotic, full-throated endorsement of the pillars of our democracy, red meat for the ideals that built a great nation. Today, we bring you voices that you haven't heard enough of. I'm your host, Bill Finch, and this is Wake Up, and I want to welcome to our show Charles Rothenberger, who is the brains behind all the legal matters protecting our climate from Save the Sound, and Sam Donowski, who runs one of the most powerful organizations nationwide. She runs the Connecticut chapter, Sierra Club, out every day fighting for a clean environment, clean air, clean water, and fighting against climate change. Welcome both of you this morning to Wake Up here on WICC. Hello, are you there?
Bill, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Charles. How are you this morning?
I'm happy to be here, and I hope I can live up to that wonderful introduction.
Sam, are you here?
Yeah, I'm here. Thanks so much, Bill. Excited to talk with you this morning.
Listen, we all talk at the Capitol often, and one of the things we're pretty depressed, right? We've got a president now who's not even lukewarm on the environment where we need to work harder. We have a president who's actually the enemy of the environment, an enemy of clean water and clean air, an enemy of fighting climate change. It's really, really frustrating because no Republicans in the House or the Senate in Washington have stood up to him to say, you know, environmental protection and fighting climate change is bipartisan. Richard Nixon created the EPA. I remember when that was done. And I just want to start on a positive note because all three of us have commiserated about the terrible things. But as we know, the private market is zooming ahead with renewables. And just to set the tone, let's all remember, it's the 50th anniversary, right? What was it? The 1970 was the first Earth Day, so this is the 55th anniversary, correct, of Earth Day. And I was there. I don't know that you guys were kind of little kids probably then. Sam, I don't even think you were born yet. But what happened on that day was we gelled around a national agenda. And this morning, I'm sitting there having my cereal at my breakfast table, looking out at the fish ladder at Beardsley Park, and I'm watching a bald eagle fly by and two or three osprey fishing for herring. Had we not had the first Earth Day, had we not had the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the National Environmental Policy Act, the Endangered Species Act, and many others, I'd be looking out at a blank sky right now. And just to put this in context, folks, we're all talking about public policy that happens in an instant. Geologically, geo, it means Earth. Earth was hit by a giant asteroid, and everybody thinks, poof, the dinosaurs went away. No, the climatic change that was probably instantly more than humans, but not over time. Humans have had a much greater impact on the planet than the asteroid did over time. We're in the largest die-off of species much faster than when the asteroid hit. It took thousands of years for species to go extinct after a giant asteroid created the Gulf of Mexico and changed the climate. So I just want to start out with that fact. When we humans listen to Sam and listen to Charles about the climate change that humans are creating, we will survive and we will benefit. And today we want to talk about clean energy. We've got solar on our rooftops. We've got some wind offshore. But let's start with you, Charles. You know, one of the things that everybody, the propaganda say, is it's more expensive. We know now the cheapest way to generate electricity is solar and wind. Tell us about Connecticut's on-again, off-again relationship with wind, Charles, and why it's so important.
Yeah, sure. So in 2019, Connecticut authorized the procurement of up to 2,000 megawatts of offshore wind by 2030. And that's the equivalent of about 30% of our state load. Sadly, we haven't really made a ton of progress towards that. We are building our very first offshore wind facility, Revolution Wind, which we're sharing with Rhode Island. So that's being assembled in New London at the State Pier. If anyone is driving across the Gold Star Bridge, you can see those amazing, beautiful towers being assembled. So, you know, that really underscores, one, the fact that these projects are really great economic drivers for the state of Connecticut. But we're not alone. 11 states up and down the seaboard have established targets for offshore wind, about 84 megawatts to be completed over the next two decades. And the good news is, because you wanted to start with good news, about 56 of those gigawatts are currently in some stage of development. And I know the current administration is looking to derail
stop the clean, cheap energy that we need so desperately. Really wise, right? We're going to get back to that thought in just a second. But as we are a commercial radio station, we need to take a break, and we'll be right back after a few commercial messages.
Join the conversation, 203-333-9422. Back to Wake Up with Bill Finch, live on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
And putting things in geological perspective, Kool and the Gang is going to be performing down in Stamford. Their first album was released in 1969. So you think that's a long time ago, right? That's 25 plus 31. That's not that long ago in geological time. And that's what we're talking about today with Sam Donowski from the Sierra Club and Charles Rothenberger from Save the Sound. Get your checkbooks out and donate to both of those organizations if you could. They're helping to fight for us up at the legislature. So, Charles, you were talking about wind, and let's just talk about the price. You know, PURA is always being kicked around, although I think Marissa Gillette is doing a fine job of holding the utilities' feet to the fire, trying to get a smart grid, trying to keep the price low. And people really don't understand how PURA works, but they are trying hard to lower our electric bills. And wind and solar are a way to do it, right? They're cheaper.
Well, 100%. And, you know, everybody...
Say that again. They're cheaper.
Yeah. So the one thing, there's a lot of gaslighting going on, right? So people always compare, and this is primarily, I think, you know, I hate being partisan, but, you know, the Republicans in the legislature are always comparing the cost of new power purchase agreements for renewable energy to the wholesale cost of electricity. And that's just apples and oranges. What you really want to be looking at is something called the levelized cost of energy comparison. And what that is, so it doesn't compare new generation, which needs to be built, to existing generation, which has paid for all of its sunk costs. It compares, okay, so what would be needed? What's the price to build a new type of generation, given its capacity factor, given everything else? So it's a very apples to apples comparison. Community scale solar is actually at the bottom rung of that cost-wise. So that is the cheapest source of new generation that we can actually be investing in.
So that's rooftop solar. It's on our home. It's on our condos. If we can do community solar at some point in Connecticut, it would be on rooftops, correct?
So individual home rooftop is a little bit more expensive. This is really the large arrays that you'll maybe see.
Like up in
this
Windsor.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, rooftop, just because of scale, a little bit more expensive. But look, you can reduce your electricity bill to zero. You throw some solar panels on your roof. And people may not realize this. You know, we have about 1,600 megawatts of installed solar right now. About one in every 10 households currently has solar on their roof. So it's very popular. People are, you know, embracing it. And, you know, you talk to anybody who has it, they love it. Zero downside.
I have it. I love it. I don't regret it. I don't regret it for a minute. It's on my house and it's working every day, even cloudy days like today. It's still generating electricity.
Yep, no, 100%. And, you know, sunny days when everybody is cranking their air conditioning, that's when solar is doing its best job. So it's really well matched to demand loads.
So let me just shift gears for one quick second, because you made a great point, and I'd like to get Sam in on this conversation. Sam, we know that wind and your favorite, solar, not that we want to play favorites here, but, you know, Charles likes wind and you like solar. I like them both. I think you both really like them both. But Sam wants to talk about solar. And, Sam, we've got a messaging problem, right? We go and we talk to legislators about the levelized cost, which is quite a bit cheaper for renewables now than it is for fossil fuels. And they just point to the utility bill. How do we bridge that gap? How do we bring everyone to the point where we're making long-term wise decisions that will not only fight climate change but reduce our electricity bills? How do we make that message, Sam? You're Sierra Club. You must know the answer to that.
Well, I think it's important to hear what's happening and get out of kind of the negative feedback loop and see what's happening around the world, in this country, and here in Connecticut. You know, the solutions to climate change didn't exist many decades ago, but they're here. The good news is these solutions are here now. They're ready to deploy, and they're being deployed quickly. So just to take a trip around the globe and then get us to Connecticut, you know, right now in Pakistan, of all places, home to more than 240 million people, where they had temperatures as high as 122 degrees last year, making air conditioning absolutely essential, they are experiencing one of the most rapid solar deployment on the planet.
So it's great news.
You know, and this is a country, you know, that has extreme poverty and economic instability, but they are now the second biggest market in the world for solar, and the
next
boom
to China.
Is just happening there.
It's next to China, number one.
Yeah.
Tell
Germany.
You're going around the world, but you're right. You're in the East. Before we go to Germany, tell people just a thumbnail. Everybody wants to vilify China, but they have more renewables than anybody, right?
Yeah, they're growing in leaps and bounds, and of course, producing a lot of the solar panels.
Now subject to tariff, but you wanted to go to Germany. Fill us in on that.
Yeah. Germany has this really cool kind of their own revolution going on around balcony solar. And so they've made it possible for people to roll out a solar panel on their balcony,
wow,
to plug it in and be able to charge things. And there's millions of them deployed and about 750,000 registered with the government, but they think more actually happening. You know, and here in the United States, here in Connecticut, residential rooftop in the last couple of years has outpaced what the state was expecting the target to be. Commercial solar has consistently, year after year, come in with projects that exceed the limited cap we have. So the demand is there, and the demand is there for financial reasons. You know, people care about the climate, but they're trying to lower energy costs and they're trying to have control over their own electricity. So this shift is happening largely for financial reasons, but it greatly benefits our climate.
And so vilifying the Chinese, many of the far right people vilify the state of California, but California has the most residential solar, correct? Am I anywhere near accurate on that?
Well, Texas is coming up on their heels, and I'd have to actually look at the numbers, but California, you know, last summer they had 100% of their electricity demand for 10 hours a day, 96 out of 116 days between the end of, you know, winter and the beginning of winter later in the year, where they were producing power from renewables.
It's exciting. Yeah. I know the utilities often cite so many people going off the grid as a way to raise rates for everyone else because they're losing those customers. But we know that's not true when only 1 in 10 in Connecticut, much less than California or Texas, have solar. So that argument doesn't hold water, we would hope, with legislators and with PURA commissioners. But it seems to me that we're in a huge transition period. And if you want to reflect on this a little bit, we have built a system, and most people just flip the lights and they don't know where it comes from. But having been a mayor and a state senator and you guys being lobbyists, we have a little bit more information about knowing where it comes from. We've built a incredibly centralized, usually fossil fuel-based, massive energy production facilities, and then a network called the grid that gets the electricity to that light switch and to that computer and to that charger of our cell phone. Now, we know that that's got to change, right? We have you might want to spend a little bit of time talking about how all of the renewables help us distribute generation so that we don't have to have massive centralized fossil fuel plants anymore. We can distribute the generation, maybe some small fuel cells and things like that that are a little bit cleaner. But tell us a little bit how we're going to make that transition from these massive centralized coal-burning fossil fuel-generated grid systems to distributed energy, which is cleaner and cheaper. How are we going to do that?
Well, you raise a great point, and you know, happy to report here in New England, at least, and we have a New England-wide electricity grid. We're all connected to each other. Coal is a thing of the past, so no coal plants here in Connecticut, although there's still a few hanging on elsewhere in the country, but increasingly expensive and not economic, setting aside their environmental woes. So, look, whether we're talking about utility-scale solar or offshore wind, we are going to have to move that power from where it's being generated to the homes that need it. The good news is we have a pretty robust system currently in place, so we have some excess capacity in the system. So we don't have to start building out that grid today. We can do it in stages as we're bringing on additional resources. And that's going to be the case regardless of what power source we're looking at. Renewables, however, come with some built-in benefits, not the least of which is, one, reduced and avoided pollution and climate emissions, so significant health benefits accruing there to the population as a whole, and also zero fuel costs. So we don't need to be fracking in other parts of the country and delivering that gas here to Connecticut via pipelines. So we can keep all of this, we can keep our local economy in good shape without sending all of those dollars for imported fuels to Texas or Louisiana or what have you.
Sam?
Yeah, I would just add to that, well, I would lift up what Charles said, like our grid needs to be updated regardless of whether we're transitioning to renewable energy. So since we are, now is the time to make sure we are able to bring those renewables onto the grid in a really orderly fashion. And solar and wind together, they have this interesting symbiosis that solar is very powerful in the middle of the day. It's much more powerful in the spring, summer, fall, whereas wind is much more powerful in the winter and in the evening hours. So together, they can really help meet our demands and add battery in there, and we can stretch that out to meet every season and every hour of the day.
And I think you both agree, and just a quick comment before the bottom of the hour when we go to some local news and weather, it's going to be kind of hard to stop this beautiful sort of kumbaya that you're talking about. Cleaner air, cleaner water, cheaper prices, fighting climate change, creating phenomenal jobs. It's going to be kind of hard to stop this if we try to stay positive. I guess that's the theme of the show. What do you think?
Well, the proof is in the pudding, right? Sam mentioned Texas as one of the leaders in solar. It actually has more utility-scale solar than any other state, 22 gigawatts. 20% of its electricity generation is produced by wind. That is pales compared to Iowa, where 50% of Iowa's electricity generation is wind. So we're talking about red states, not just you know, blue New England here. So the proof is in the pudding. If those states are betting big on renewables, you know there's something to it.
Well, we're going to come back for the second half of the show, and we'll talk a little bit about the Trump effect and tariffs. We'll talk about more on distributed energy generation and storage, and also about the just transition. making sure the EJ communities are protected and we create great union, good-paying jobs. And we'll be right back after the news and weather. Thank you, Paul Goodman, in the studio. Take it away.
Talking about what matters to you this morning. Wake up with Bill Finch. WICC 695.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Just so happy that you all joined us this morning because we're talking about the future of human survival on the planet Earth, nothing less. We always talk, those of us who lobby for green jobs and for green policies at the Capitol, and we've talked philosophically about how, you know, after great climatic change that occurred from the asteroid impact and it is now occurring by human activities much faster in many ways than it did with the asteroid, because it's all over the Earth. The emissions are uniformly spread pretty much all over the Earth and going up into our climate and creating a blanket over our Earth. And of course, without a greenhouse effect, we wouldn't be able to live. So we want the Goldilocks zone. We want the just right zone for our greenhouse effect. But if I were to set up a lemonade stand in front of my house and I sold one cup for 11 cents and one cup for 7 cents and one cup for 5 cents, Sam, which cup do you think they'd buy the most of? 11 cents, 7 cents, or 5 cents?
This is a trick question, Bill.
No.
Oh.
Which one would you buy?
The cheapest cup, same. Of course.
Yeah, you'd go with the nickel cup. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's the difference between coal at 11 cents a kilowatt hour, gas at 7 cents, and solar and wind at around a nickel. So stop the lying, corporate America. Stop polluting. This is just like the cigarette companies lying and lying and lying and then being had their pants sued off because they lied to us about the impact of smoking. The fossil fuel industry is doing the exact same thing. They're lying to you. And that's no coincidence that we now have a liar in chief in the White House who's mimicking what they say. Drill, baby, drill, bring back coal. All those things will be extraordinarily expensive to your bottom line, to your wallet, just like the tariffs. We're in a period of make our democracies around the world hate America again. Just a sad state of affairs. But look, Canada just elected a liberal prime minister in direct repudiation to what's going on in our country. We hope that little shows like this where Sam and Charles can give you the truth about what's really going on can help to bring everyone around. And just a little advertisement. The midterms are only about a year and a half away. If you don't like what's going on in America, if you don't like the higher prices, if you don't like the anti-climate activities of the president, if you don't like his defying the law and arresting people and disappearing them, if you don't like those things, which I obviously don't, that's why I'm on the radio every Sunday at 10 trying to talk about it, you can vote to change that in the midterm elections. Another asterisk, and Charles said you don't want to be partisan. I never wanted to be partisan on environmental issues. I chaired the Environment Committee. John McKinney was a great supporter of mine as the ranking member in the Senate on the Environment Committee. We did things together because everybody, regardless of the little letter after their name, wanted to have clean air and clean water. And we reminded people all the time that it was Republican administrations that created many of these laws. And now we have a president that says, you know, he doesn't understand history. He doesn't understand that the Republicans, but the party has hitched their wagon to him. And unfortunately, it has become partisan, guys. What are we going to do about that? Let's talk first about how we're going to get through this just transition, Sam, and make sure that disadvantaged communities are elevated as we invest and good union jobs are created along the way to help build the middle class. That's the just transition, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's where policy plays such an important role. You know, as folks choose more renewables, it's likely going to be those that have greater means that are able to do that. And so it's really important that our policy helps to ensure that there's not a great inequity when it comes to access to solar and access to other renewables. And, you know, the Inflation Reduction Act, which is now being dismantled by the Trump administration, did a really thoughtful job of that, where the investments that were being made in renewables, it required that 40% of those investments go to disadvantaged communities. It required that that the industries be created in the United States to provide things like offshore wind supply chains and heat pumps and electric vehicles. And it required that the workers that do that have good paying jobs. And so, you know, that's something that Connecticut has done a pretty good job trying to emulate. But I think, you know, when we think about that, we need to make sure that there are those policy levers in place.
You know, I really appreciate what you said about the good paying jobs. As you know, I lobby for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers and the National Electrical Contractors Association. I think that's the greenest. All the building trades are very green because they're involved with, you know, putting the foundations in for those large scale solar and putting the panels on and tying them to the grid. We just had an ad here on WICC before you came on. I don't know if you heard it. It was for Grainger and for linemen, electrical linemen, to go and get their supplies at Grainger. We don't realize how much ripple effect there is when a state says, we want to do this transition, but we want to make sure that the companies that are getting this public money have really high-grade apprenticeship programs. You know, union apprenticeship programs graduate almost 100% of the people in the program. Non-union, much less than half of their people finish the apprenticeship programs. So when you spend your money on something that gives you half of what the other one gives, it's not a wise investment. If you spend it on some of the union jobs, you get the apprentices. You also get the free college level training. You know, an electrician goes to school for up to 1,000 hours in the case of the IBW, and starts right off the bat from day one while they're in school working live on a job. So it's apples and oranges. And we always say, listen, if you want to really build a middle class and fight climate change, we should prefer those companies that hire people from successful apprenticeship programs, we'll get more for bang for our buck. So it's a little advertisement for my green building trades. But you know, every time we hire a local company, and all the workers and all the companies who are in NECA or IBW and all building trades, they're all local. So that means, as when I was mayor, we did about $500 million in union construction work. All that money helped us get through a terrible recession, and kept the money in the community. So getting back to the pricing and the messaging, tell me what you think the biggest challenges are, Charles, for us going forward. We just got 50004 passed, the Senate Bill 50004. Everybody thought it was a great bill. Or was that a House bill? I'm sorry. But it wasn't transformative per se. It was sort of recommitting ourselves to our goals and adding a few things in. What's going to create that sort of tipping point for us to really supercharge what we need to do to get this cheaper green electricity and fight climate change?
Yeah, well, you talked to 5004, and a lot of important elements to it in terms of maintaining our momentum, certainly not as much as we would have liked, and it was very scaled back from the original proposal. You mentioned great former Senator John McKinney on the Republican side. The politics just right now are so incredibly tough. The reason that bill ended up looking like it does is because the other side would just, threaten a filibuster. So, there's not 12 hours to spend on the floor debating these bills. And, I remember, as you remember, we passed the first California Clean Cars bill with broad bipartisan support. John McKinney and his deputy, Bill Anaskovich, were just as much champions of that legislation as the Democratic leaders, Senator Williams and his team. That no longer is the case. We seem to be in this situation where it's almost forbidden to agree on anything. Everything is a knee-jerk opposition reaction. And, a big part of that, I think, is we saw the roadshows over the summer trying to stir up and misdirect public anger over high electricity bills. Republicans were pointing to the public benefits charge when actually it was a millstone charge, nuclear power existing, that we're paying off, that caused the spike in those bills compounded by a very hot summer. they didn't want to talk about Millstone. Why? One, they love nuclear. They're not alone in that. A lot of people do. But they overwhelmingly supported the Millstone bailout. And so...
That was sort of the it laid an egg, so to speak, later on. I have to interrupt you for just a second. We're going to take a commercial break, and we're going to be right back to hear how we move into the forward, a clean energy future with Samantha Donowski from Sierra Club and Charles Rothenberger from Save the Sound. We'll be right back after these messages.
Wake Up with Bill Finch is live on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut. Speak your mind. 203-333-9422.
And welcome back to Wake Up every Sunday at 10 on WICC 600 AM and 95.9 FM, and also on the internet at voiceofconnecticut.com. Listen, thank you so much, Sam and Charles, for joining us. We've got about another 10 minutes or so for you to be able to clear up all the misperceptions that exist out there and put the world on the right track toward a green energy future. Geez, we've been talking about this since the first Earth Day, and I think we even had a solar day for a few years after that. What are your thoughts, Sam, on the biggest challenges ahead? We talked about the lack of bipartisanship, which is obviously a huge challenge, and a president from the Republican Party could have done much to unify the country. This particular president's not interested in unifying anything but his own bank accounts. But, you know, what we've got to figure out is, despite whoever's in office, what do we do to support the private market? What do we do to support faith groups, community groups that are taking action on their own that may not even need government approval? What do you think, Sam?
Yeah, I think that, you know, a lot of folks, as I said earlier, are really eager to adopt clean energy, which we know, you know, solar, wind, battery storage, EVs, heat pumps to offset fossil fuel heating are of interest to lots of people. And so they're looking to access it. And, you know, giving good information, getting people the resources they need to move forward on their own, telling stories. So hearing from people who have made this transition and how they did it and, you know, what the barriers were, so that others can do the same, is this important, is an important piece of the puzzle, and policy is the other piece. You know, we need to be doing those in tandem, and the education is so important. So I appreciate that you are delivering that here on the show.
Well, I appreciate it. It seems like sometimes that we're Sisyphus pushing this boulder up the hill. I guess we've all been doing it all our lives, so we're too dumb to quit. Charles, what do you think moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think Sam has it totally right. We need to more clearly and more consistently communicate the benefits. And I'll just throw out, you know, two examples. One from my neck of the woods. You know, we're all taxpayers. The Groton Board of Education installed solar panels on two of its schools, which is going to end up saving the Board of Education budget $40,000 per year. That amounts to nearly $1 million over the lifespan of those solar arrays. So that's great for every resident in the community of Groton. There's a manufacturer here in Connecticut, Lyman Products, using rooftop solar to generate 96% of the electricity that it uses in its processes. And that's saving that company over $300,000 over the lifespan of those solar arrays. So there are real benefits for taxpayers and local communities. Manufacturers get this. You know, they're always looking at cutting costs and how they can save money on their processes. And, you know, renewables do a great job of that. So we just need to make these stories more widely known.
Well, I really think that's very important. So many people talk about the great industrial base of Connecticut. It's shrunk a little bit, but we could rejuvenate it and build it back up again. People like the Center for Advanced Technology are generating new ideas and new technologies that turn out to be small companies and then larger companies. I'd like to give a shout out to Brendan Sharkey, former speaker, and Gary Hale, former state senator, who I support their work at Advanced Energy and DAISY Solutions, because they go to factories and schools and they say, listen, show us your gas and electric bills, and we'll tell you whether renewables is going to save you money, which case it mostly always does. And there's no money out of pocket for anybody that has a building. All you have to do is supply them with the gas and electrical bills, and they will tell you whether renewables make sense, and they will refer you to installers, and they will finance it for you. And so you get these renewable energy systems on your factory or your school without laying out any money at all, with getting great science to back you up and make your decision. And then, you know, you're not putting any money out, and you begin saving. Now, if you had financed it yourself, perhaps you might save even a little bit more, but who wants to go through all those headaches? The great thing about Advanced Energy and DAISY is they're out there in the private market making this stuff work. It's really a pleasure of mine to work with them. Just to mention a few things we could do. Everybody here listening, go and call a solar installer. Just make sure that if you do the work that there's a licensed electrician involved. Some of these people are a little fly by night, but most of them are reputable. Test drive an EV, right? I mean, I don't know anybody that ever test drove an EV and says, I want to go back to an internal combustion engine. I drive an internal combustion engine car because I don't have the money right now to get a new EV. But if I did, it's a no-brainer. There's so much more fun to drive, and it's about $1 a gallon equivalent right now as compared to gas at $3. You know, vote like in the next election like your kids' grandchildren's lives depended on it. Donate to the Sierra Club. Donate to Save the Sound. Donate to the Connecticut Roundtable for Climate and Jobs. If you're a young person, join a building trade. Your education is free. The IBEW, I always tell people, is the greenest union anywhere because we put in all the solar panels, fuel cells, and heat pumps, and all kinds of green renewable systems. So there's lots of things going on in the economy. And I just think in the next, we got about 3 or 4 minutes here. I'd like to give each of you a wish list, like I just gave, for people listening that they could do on their own level, their family level, their church, their community level. What do you think? Sam, you go first. You've got a lot of great ideas on this subject.
Yeah, I'll go first. I think of this transition to renewables in stages, right? Energy efficiency first is the simplest thing that everyone can do. It doesn't require a great outlay of money, but you can reduce the amount of energy you use by getting an energy efficiency audit. Energize Connecticut, which is the state's program, will send someone out to your house or business to see where the, you know, air is leaking out of your house, where you're wasting heat, where you're, you know, where your inefficiencies are and deal with those. So that first. And then, you know, as you have to replace things, we're not advocating for people to go and, you know, get rid of perfectly good equipment. As things need to be replaced, look for the, educate yourself now so that when your hot water heater breaks down, you know what the most climate-friendly one is, and I'll give you a little hint. It's an electric heat pump hot water heater, and it's also the cheapest you could possibly be using. So get to know, get prepared. So as you're replacing things, you're doing, you're moving towards renewables and greater efficiency and saving yourself money and protecting the climate at the same time.
And I might add before we go to Charles that the very program you talk about, Energize Connecticut, is what Republicans are putting on the chopping block by getting rid of the combined benefits charge on our electric bill. Aid to poor people and seniors to heat their home in the winter, and aid to make our homes energy efficient. Charles, tell me your wish list.
Yeah, well, you know, just, you know, going back to the politics, I guess, you know, part of my wish list is that we could actually engage in debates about the facts. We could talk about not just the costs, but also the benefits, because you have to balance those out. You know, I think Sam had a lot of great points. Energy efficiency should be job number one for everybody. It's the lowest hanging fruit. And, you know, the cheapest kilowatt of electricity that you use, that you pay for, is the one that you don't use. I would also say, you know, be aware. Right? Look at your surroundings. As you drive around your local community, you're going to see these strange boxes on the sides of lots of houses, lots of businesses. Those are heat pumps. You know, they're not this strange, untested technology, and they're being adopted quite broadly by residents and businesses. So familiarize yourself, you know, with sort of the growing ubiquity of that technology. Talk to your neighbor who maybe has one and what their experience with it is. You know, the same thing with solar panels or electric vehicles. Talk to people who actually have some experience driving these vehicles, living with solar panels, and what it's actually done for their energy costs. And get some real facts. Don't just listen to the politicians who are not always giving you the straight dope, I would say.
Yeah, I'm a politician. I consider myself a recovering politician, but I do think you're absolutely right, both of you, and it's just an honor to have you on my show. We talk often about how we'd like to have almost every show be people like you giving information to the public, because they're just swarmed with lies and misinformation from the White House on down. One final ad I'd like to take out here, and that's for local government. You know, as mayor of Bridgeport, RB Green 2020 reduced the greenhouse gas emissions within the entire city of Bridgeport by 5% in 5 years. No other city had did it. You know, we followed Mike Bloomberg's lead at Plan YC. We created Be Green 2020. And we looked at every single activity within the city. Stormwater diversion is a huge one because you burn tons and tons of fossil fuels to operate and remove pollution at the sewage treatment plants. It's one of the most Rube Goldberg type of inefficiencies we have in society. And promoting efficient living styles, we know that urban dwellers create about 7 tons of greenhouse gases per capita. Sounds like a lot, right, for something that's weightless. We all, our living habits create 7 tons. But the good news is that's a third of what Connecticut suburbanites create. Living with large lawns and many computers and many cars and longer distances and no adjoining walls or ceilings to share heat. So people in the cities create the greatest opportunity. Density creates the greatest opportunity. We need to work hard to have the environmental movement promote city life, promote local government's actions like we did in Bridgeport, and create plans in every city, even though that there may be fewer funds around, all the more important to save the money by not burning fossil fuels and having it go up the chimney. So I want to thank Samantha Donowski from Sierra Club, Charles Rothenberger from Save the Sound, two of the smartest people you're ever going to meet. We're going to have them back on the show again because we got to hammer the point home that we want our grandchildren to have a healthy planet. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week at WICC 600 AM, 95.9, The Voice of Connecticut. Thanks to Paul Goodman in the studios. Well, he had a great show. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week.